Hey guys, this is Justin Coffin for the 330 Sports Show. Today is Thursday, January 20th, 2022. Joe, I'm back in studio. It's been like 5 weeks, but it took a little bit of time for Christmas, the holidays. We're doing some remote recordings, but back in studio now, and we're going to go over a few things today. You know, probably more on the shorter podcast than the usual, but we're going to do our normal check-in with the Cleveland Cavaliers. We'll do our wine and gold check-in. We will talk, the NFL is now into the Elite Eight, the divisional round of the playoffs, which is, the four in the AFC, four in the NFC. So we'll talk about those games coming up. We'll talk about some news and notes around the sports world. And then not on this show, but we're going to have kind of its own separate show. We're going to do that'll be premiering after this. I don't know. I'll talk to Joe. We'll figure it out. But it'll be airing today. I did an interview yesterday with Danielle Vuletich of Robert Morris Women's Basketball. She played locally at Western Reserve. She also played locally for a year at South Range. Just a dominant player in high school, became very, very good, got noticed in her freshman year. And, Coach Barnes at YSU was looking at her, and then she kind of got recruited. I know there was five or six schools on her list. And she talks about a little bit of the differences between high school and college, being a student athlete and all that challenges. And I had her give some good advice for the younger version of herself or younger high school athletes that might be trying to break into the Division I ranks like she is. So that interview will air right after this show, most likely, or sometime earlier or later this afternoon. And by the way, Robert Morris women host the Youngstown State Lady Penguins tonight at Robert Morris, and then they will also be traveling here on, to Youngstown on Saturday. So as their Horizon League Conference members. So that's what's coming up today. Let's start with the Cleveland Cavaliers. So the Cleveland Cavaliers have been excellent this year. They've already exceeded their over-under win total. And let me do the quick math. 46 games in on an 82-game schedule. So they have well exceeded expectations. They did lose last night to the Chicago Bulls 117-104. However, that was their seventh game on the road in the last eight games. Also, their third consecutive game in a different time zone, which I thought was kind of interesting. So they now get 2 days off, and then they get three straight home games, which is going to be well needed for this team. So last night, they played the Chicago Bulls. Chicago is number one in the Eastern Conference right now. And, the Cavs played them tough. They had a bad second quarter, where Chicago outscored them, I believe, by 14 points, but, they were right in it right till the end, till about the final, 3 minutes of the game. So that will be a nice like barometer, nice measuring stick to see where the Cavs are right now. They did knock off the Brooklyn Nets, who are, right up there as well, on Monday. And last night, Lauri Markkanen, one of the Cavs' new pickups, had his best game of the year, 28 points. He also used to play for the Chicago Bulls his first 4 years. 28 points last night, 7 rebounds, 1 steal, and 1 block in 33 minutes played. And like I mentioned, he was a Chicago Bull the first 4 years of his career. Darius Garland. I do want to spend a little bit of time on Darius Garland. I think right now, if you look at up and down throughout the Eastern Conference, he is probably the second best point guard in the entire Eastern Conference. I'm excluding James Harden. James Harden's not a point guard. He's more of a shooting guard. But I'm going to say Trae Young is slightly better currently. However, I think Darius Garland is right there neck and neck with Trae Young of the Atlanta Hawks as the best point guard in the Eastern Conference. So his numbers Last year, 17.4 points. This year, 19.7 points. Last year, averaged 6.1 assists. This year, up to almost 8 assists per game. Last year, 2.4 rebounds. This year, 3.4 rebounds. Shooting percentage up by about a point and a half. And he's shooting at 92% from the free throw line. That is up about 7%. So great numbers from Darius Garland. I think he will be an all-star this year. He deserves it. By the way, the all-star game is in Cleveland this year, which is really cool because it's the 75th anniversary of the NBA. They're going to unveil the top 75 players in NBA history, which will be really cool. You'll have a few guys in that game that are in that top 75 group. Obviously, LeBron, probably got Durant in there. I'll have to look at the list, but Steph Curry and, you know, guys down the list like that that have been around long enough that will be on that list. So pretty cool there. Evan Mobley, let's talk just a little bit about him. This season, he is one of only three NBA players, not rookies, three NBA players in the entire league averaging 14 or more points a game, 50% shooting percentage from the field, 8 or more rebounds, and 1.5 blocks per game. He is in that category with Giannis Antetokounmpo, last year's finals MVP, Rudy Gobert, who is the defensive player of the year, and then Evan Mobley, the third pick of the draft this year. So Evan Mobley is putting up huge, huge numbers for a rookie. I've heard a lot of people compare him to Kevin Garnett. I've heard some Chris Bosh comparisons. You know, I've heard some Anthony Davis comparisons. You put him in that category with any of those three guys, I will take it. This guy is a building block for the Cavs' future, right along with Evan Mobley. Jared Allen, finally, the Cavs have a trio of stars this year. Jared Allen is that third star, maybe the most consistent player, maybe the most consistent center in the league this year. You know, you got to put him right up in the conversation with Jokic, with a few of the other top centers in the league. But Jared Allen is right there, especially for defensive player of the year. 16.3 points a game, 11 rebounds, 1.5 blocks a game, and shooting almost 70% from the field, which is just unheard of. So Jared Allen is that third in the trio of stars. Now I'm going to talk about Joe's guy here for a minute, Mr. Kevin Love. Kevin Love, and, you know, much maligned, has been a fantastic teammate this season. Has the younger guys seem to love him, seem to gravitate towards him. I think he has embraced his role as being that veteran presence. He's coming off the bench. He's given the Cavs, he's playing about 21 minutes a game, which is not asking much. It's about 5 minutes a quarter. So, you know, but in that brief time, he's averaging 14 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, and he's shooting 40% from 3-point range. So Joe, you know, got to give Kevin a little love. How about that?
There you go. See, I'm glad you come on board.
So, credit where credit's due. And as long, you know, I think I've said this before, but as long as he's doing his job and making this team better, that's all you can ask. I mean, he makes $30 million a year. I mean,
it's very,
you know,
expensive.
He's a very expensive. Yes. So, but don't be surprised if you hear his name or Sexton's name or Ricky Rubio, who Sexton and Rubio are out for the year, but they have expiring contracts. I'm not exactly smart enough to know all the financials of the NBA and all how the trades work and things like that. You know, that's why the GMs make a little bit of money. But the contract matches in the NBA have to be within, I believe, 125%. So let me just say this. If you want to trade for a guy that's making $20 million a year, you have to match that within 125% of the contract. So there's going to be draft picks involved. There's going to be other trades involved, but the Cavs have the necessary assets, I think, to bring in another scorer, another shooter. I think their biggest weakness right now is another shooter from the outside, because Isaac Okoro is a nice player. He's a lockdown defender, but he is not a great shooter, and that's what the Cavs need. Markkanen can be a little bit touch and go. Ricky Rubio was that other guy for you, but he's obviously been out. Sexton's a scorer, but he's out. So the Cavs are a nice team, but I think they're one wing player short of being a really great team, in my opinion. So let me throw out a did you know for you guys this year. The Cavs have had four different four-game winning streaks this season. So November 1st to 7th, they won four in a row. November 27th to December 3rd, four in a row. December 8th to 18th, six straight wins. And then January 10th up until last night, four straight wins. So pretty nice run there. You know, it shows they can string some wins together, beat some quality teams, and they're not just beating up on you know, the bad teams of the NBA. They're beating up on some pretty good teams this year. Real quick, check in on the Eastern Conference standings. These are updated as of this afternoon. The Chicago Bulls, who the Cavs did lose to last night, are sitting in tied for first with the Miami Heat in the first seed. You know, percentage points, but basically each loss, each win is technically half a game if you look at the numbers like that. So so Chicago, Miami, Brooklyn Nets, Milwaukee Bucks, 76ers, Cavs, all kind of bunched up within 2.5 games, separating one from six, which is pretty cool in the NBA. It's just cool to see some parity. It's cool to see the Cavs back in the playoff chase, and it's neat to see. You know, maybe it could be anyone's game this year. Milwaukee's probably the best team or the deepest roster. Brooklyn obviously has got the star powers. Kevin Durant is going to be out for a couple weeks, but you know, I think it's really anyone's game in the Eastern Conference this year. So we shall see how that goes. And a real quick by the numbers for the Cleveland Cavaliers this year. This is just in the Eastern Conference ranks, and this is as of yesterday. First in wins, first in net rating, first in defensive rating, first in average score differential, first in opponents. Scoring, first in interior field goal percentage allowed, first in secondary and potential assists, first in paint scoring, first plus minus, and first in win streak. So pretty impressive there. Numbers for the Cavs basically shows you they're doing a lot of really good things, especially on the defensive end. So that's fantastic. So with that said, let's shift our focus to the NFL. And, you know, Joe, I see you have the Twitter machine up.
I do.
So what's the big or news or latest on Baker Mayfield?
Yeah, so yesterday, Baker had his surgery recovery and everybody's kind of watching to see if it's successful and how he bounces back. And
yeah,
really looking forward to getting the guy healthy to see mm-hmm. what happens. So I want to check in with you. Like, what are your thoughts on all that cluster?
Yeah. So I am torn like his labrum.
Yes. Right.
I'm very torn because this season was not what we expected. Mm-hmm. Are there better options out there? I think so. Is it fair to judge Baker on a year where he was completely injured, basically outside of five quarters? I don't know. I'm trying to take what I saw last year, the end of last season, and sort of project that into next season. As a healthy quarterback, can he get those numbers? Obviously, the whole Odell thing, that was a big drama shit show. We had Kareem Hunt out for a lot of the year. We had a lot of tackles out for the year. So we had guys missing with COVID, you know? So it was not an ideal year for the Cleveland Browns. But you look at Aaron Rodgers. He's played with like a broken toe the whole year. Russell Wilson did not have a good year, but had a banged up finger the whole year. You know, Garoppolo, other quarterbacks were all banged up this year, but they still managed to win. Now, I'm not comparing that to a torn labrum, but if you go
back to that week too, mm-hmm. do you sit him down, put Case in for the remaining year and do it a throwaway season or what?
Well, yeah, that's such a tough, like, hindsight's 2020.
Right.
So, you know, knowing we didn't make the playoffs and things like that, I'd probably say, yeah, you know, because I think this is a 4-month recovery from the surgery, from what I've heard. So he's not going to be able to throw a ball or anything until early May, end of April. And I don't know. I think I would have probably played Case from that Denver game on. You know, as long as he was healthy, you know, Baker in that Pittsburgh game was about as bad as it gets. Now, give Pittsburgh's defense credit. They beat him up. They had 9 sacks, but it almost felt like Stefanski was kind of hanging him out to dry, or the game plan just didn't seem right. I don't know what it was, but it's one of those things. I think Baker and the Browns were not on the same page this year, or Baker and Stefanski were not on the same page. And I don't know if, you know, there was maybe some whisperings from above. Hey, this is our guy. This is our franchise guy. We need butts in the seats. Case Keenum might not do that. You know, I don't know.
At the beginning of the season, I say, I don't know how to feel about my quarterback anymore. Mm-hmm. Because at the beginning of the season, they're like, all right, well, this dude is it. This is our franchise quarter. This is whatever. Mm-hmm. And I watched the fan base rally behind him. I watched administration rally behind him. And then when everybody started bailing, I'm like, dude, this is the same guy that was at the beginning of the season here. Right. Why is everybody so quick to say Baker's not the option? We didn't see, you know, that guy was playing scared and hurt. Mm-hmm. But he was happy feet in the pocket. Mm-hmm. He wasn't setting himself. He was throwing low, inaccurate. I mean, if that's really who, so which quarterback is it? Is it the guy that's hanging in there and throwing good passes,
right,
or the guy that can't get settled and throwing inaccurate passes?
That's a great point. And I think we saw at the end of last season, he was right around maybe, like, you could say he was maybe right around that top 10, 11, 12 quarterback range. I would say this year, if you ranked him, he would probably be, you know, like early 20s, you know, in that range. So
I'd say drops to a Brandon Whedon in 1 year.
I'm not putting him at Baker's still ahead of Brandon Whedon at his worst, maybe not arm talent, maybe not height, but you know, Baker's still better than Brandon Whedon. Maybe Brandon Whedon on his best day is as good as Baker on his worst day. Okay. Yeah. So I could get behind that. But I don't know. I think Baker at his best might be a number 10 type quarterback, and at his worst, maybe a top 20, 21, 22 quarterback. So are you happy with a guy? So you take that average, that's about 15. He's kind of right in the middle. Are you happy, and are you satisfied with a quarterback that's good enough? You know what I'm saying? Is he's good enough to get you to the playoffs. We saw that last year, and that was at his best. You know, and we got to the Final Four in the AFC. That was a great season. And, you know, maybe the Browns, if they make a few more plays, they win that game and go on to the AFC championship game. But at his worst, it was really bad this year. It was really ugly. That Steelers game was bad. You can that Detroit Lions game, even though they won, it was really bad. There was a handful of games that were just really, really ugly this year from an offensive perspective. And, you know, again, no Odell. You're missing Jarvis Landry for most of the year. You know, Higgins was kind of a no-show. Peoples Jones was good at times, but you know, Njoku was good at times, but then disappeared. Hooper, I'm not a big fan of Austin Hooper. Hooper's in my previous Kevin Love doghouse.
Exactly. Yeah. You bailed on Hooper like you bailed on
Kevin Love. I let Kevin Love out to put Austin Hooper Austin Hooper back in. So,
but now the quarterbacks that are available, if you were to, you know, grab somebody from that has an available contract to buy into, or drafting someone, I mean, it's a lateral move. I don't see that there's anybody that is that good. You got
to. Sorry, I'm trying to get my phone unlocked. I did make a note on this the other day. So, and I was doing this because I was curious, because the Pittsburgh Steelers are in a very similar situation. The Browns are going to need.
Well, they got Rudolph. That's probably going to buy. Mason, he'll get you there.
So they have Rudolph or Haskins or. So let me just go down the list. And these are very similar Browns options and Steeler options. So we'll just throw them out because, you know, there's that one guy that always writes in that gives me shit for not talking about the Pittsburgh Steelers. So we'll talk about them both. So the Browns, here's my options for the Cleveland Browns. Okay. And you can kind of tell me what you like.
I'll tell you which ones I hope for.
So you keep the status quo. You bring back a healthy Baker. You bring back Case Keenum as your backup. You know, that's option number one. Baker's on a very, you know, he's going to make, next year is the fifth year of his rookie contract, which means after next year, he's a free agent, you know, and there is, I think, only been one quarterback since 2011. I have to double check on this, but one quarterback since 2011 that has played out his fifth year and not either, you know, and still returned to that team. And I think that was Jameis Winston with the Buccaneers. I have to check on that.
And noting, though, fifth year of his contract, he's got great motivation to put up big numbers because
right
next year is the payday.
Well, yeah, and you see Josh Allen is already got his big contract. Lamar Jackson has not been signed, but you know, a lot of these quarterbacks, the market rate for a quarterback is around that $40 million a year mark, which is insane. But
well, 11th you know, ranked Baker's worth it. Yes. 20th ranked Baker, not so much.
No, exactly. So what do you do with this guy? I don't know. I think, and it has to be mutual too, because you know, Baker's going to want to be in a system where he can put up numbers, where he can thrive. He might want to play out of the shotgun a little bit more. Maybe he wants to throw it a little bit more. The Browns are obviously a run heavy team. So we'll see. So option number one was status quo.
Got it.
And for the Steelers, I guess status quo would be you stick with Rudolph and Haskins. So we'll see with them. So I'm going to kind of go down the list, but with both of these combined.
Okay.
The second option, you know, second most realistic option, and is you bring in a quarterback better than Case Keenum as your backup to maybe push Baker a little bit. And I guess same thing with the Steelers, but so a Mitch Trubisky type quarterback, a Teddy Bridgewater, a Marcus Mariota, or maybe a Gardner Minshew. Those are like some of the names I could think of in the backup world where they're not, you're not bringing them in to be your elite guy that's going to take you to a Super Bowl or deep in the playoffs. He's a guy to maybe push Baker, make him a little bit better. And if Baker's not the guy you thought, he can at least get you to the playoffs. Does that make sense?
It does.
Okay.
And I hear that there was a new backup quarterback made his way in the league. His name is like Benjamin Flofflesberger. Like, he's brand new. Don't know where he came from.
Yeah.
He can serve as a backup.
Can throw more than 7 yards downfield. Yeah.
But he's a good motivator.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to say anymore.
I set you up and you didn't take the bait.
Yeah.
What
I'm not going to say anymore. I'm not going to say anymore. Benjamin Flofflesberger. There is the rookie quarterback. You can go in the draft.
Right.
Now, there's really two, maybe three guys. I hear their names as first round quarterbacks. There's not a Trevor Lawrence or a Justin Fields or a Zach Wilson in this draft that are going to go like, you know, as high as a top five pick. These guys are more middle of the first round, but as we all know, people are going to reach on a quarterback, especially if they're really in desperate need. So here's the quarterback possibilities: Kenny Pickett, who's out of Pitt, Matt Corral out of Ole Miss. The other guy I hear occasionally in the first round is Malik Willis. He's a quarterback out of Liberty. To me, I think in a normal draft, he's probably like a third round quarterback, but I've seen him projected in the first round. I've actually seen him number 20 to the Steelers. I've seen one that had the Browns taking him at number 13. To me, that is not the answer. Yeah. So, you know, so that's an option. The other quarterbacks in this draft that could go in the top couple rounds would be Sam Howell of North Carolina, Carson Strong in Nevada. Those are probably the five, maybe Desmond Ritter of Cincinnati. So that's another option.
Those options, like, what's your favorite?
There's still two more.
Oh,
there's still two more. The other one is the pipe dream,
right?
Pipe dream is Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson.
Okay.
That's I think Aaron Rodgers is more of a, like a fantasy, if you could get that guy. I know he looks homeless and stuff, but he can play some good football. he might fit in good like late night downtown Cleveland and, you know, sit on the street and, you know, panhandle or something. But as long as he gets you some wins, whatever. So pipe dream, Aaron Rodgers. He's getting up there in age. I think he's 37 maybe, but, you know, quarterbacks, Tom Brady's like 44 years old. Like if he can play and be an elite quarterback for 3 years, that to me, that sounds worth it. You know, you can worry about 2025 in 4 years, you know, or in 2 years or whatever. But
when you though have the most expensive defensive line in the AFC, that might be a big price tag to be able to stomach.
That's a good point. That's a good point. So we'll see. So pipe dream, Aaron Rodgers. A more realistic option would be Russell Wilson. He's going to cost you a decent amount in a trade. I think, you know, at least a first round pick, maybe two. Maybe you throw a player in there. I don't know. Maybe you trade Mayfield for him and additional picks. I don't know. So, but you're not keeping Baker Mayfield if you bring in one of those guys. So that's the pipe dream scenario. And then the other veteran quarterbacks would be guys like Derek Carr. I'm very impressed with Derek Carr. He would be my number one choice, and that's where I would go.
Okay.
Jimmy Garoppolo,
all right,
which is the 49ers quarterback. Kirk Cousins in Minnesota. Minnesota just fired their head coach and GM, so they might be looking to shake things up. You know, maybe they're like, hey, Mayfield would do better here with Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen. We can spread them out more. And then, you know, maybe Kirk Cousins, who played for Stefanski, would be a good fit. So I don't love Kirk Cousins, but I think he would be, I don't think Kirk Cousins is going to hurt you. I'll put it that way. I think he'd be a stable quarterback. Jameis Winston. Jameis Winston has a lot of potential, but he makes a lot of mistakes. He throws a lot of interceptions. But before he got hurt this year, the Saints, New Orleans Saints, were 5-2, and he had thrown 14 touchdowns and 3 picks. So if you could tell, Baker Mayfield threw 15 touchdowns the entire season. Yeah. Jameis Winston did that in 7 games. Yeah. So that's an option. Matt Ryan, who's getting a little bit older, he's with the Atlanta Falcons. I think they're ready to kind of move on from him. And then there's Daniel Jones. Don't like him from the Giants. They drafted him a couple years ago. I don't think that's going to work out. There's Tua in Miami. Not sure if that's going to work out, but I don't really like Tua, but I think other places may. And then, you know, there's always like a guy out of left field that you may never think of that could become available. So those are my options. But if you're asking me, I want Derek Carr. Like
ahead of even giving Baker another shot?
If it's not going to cost you too much, I would be okay with trading, you know, like say the Raiders ask for Baker and say they ask for, you know, a first round pick. And I would try to delay that first round pick till next year. That's what I would do. But I don't know what the going rate would be, you know, on that. Mayfield and Carr at their best are very similar players, but Carr has proven that he can throw the deep ball. He can win you games. He can get you to the playoffs on a more consistent basis than Baker, in my opinion. So, you know, and it's not like Baker hasn't had his chances either. I'm a Baker defender. I'm not in the camp that is place blame, all the blame on Baker. I'm not in the camp that like is, you know, fall down in love with Baker either. So I'm kind of right in the middle. I think there's a happy medium to find there. So if you had to pick one of those options, what are you going with?
I'm really on board with, I just want to see this guy with a healthy line, a healthy self, what he really is before you make any decisions. I just don't think we can base it.
Yeah.
His downside is height still a big problem, mm-hmm. where he's getting so many tipped balls just because he can't, the defenders are towering over him. Mm-hmm. And when he starts panicking, he gets crazy with the ball. So if he can keep him settled, get him healthy and get him lined in front of him, I'd like to see him another year. I don't think those lateral moves where we just upend things, I mean, that I think that'd be devastating. Even if we got a better player in the position, right. We just established some culture that was getting some roots. Now it's disturbed again. So, I mean, I'm so confused. I would not want to be in the front office of that club at all.
Those guys are all Harvard educated. They know the finances, you know, they know how to work the system, and, you know, they have built a very, very strong team. You could argue this year's team was the best Browns roster they've had in 30 years, right. You know,
and that helps with recruiting players that want to come here.
It does.
You know, and you've had a lot of the names that showed up, mm-hmm. wouldn't have been there if it would have been a losing season and all the controversy that goes around.
Yeah. Before this year, Jadeveon Clowney, you know, it's very well known. He likes the warm weather. You know, he played his football at South Carolina. I think he lives in Miami in the off season, but he wanted to play in Cleveland this year because he knew that defense was going to be good.
Yeah.
You can see his numbers the last year. He didn't even record a sack. This year, I think he had like 9, and he was great against the run, and he only missed a couple games. And, you know, let's face it, too. You can play in Green Bay. You can play in Cleveland. You can play in Chicago. You can play in New York. You can play in New England, whatever. But you're only there for a couple months of the year. You can live wherever you want in the offseason. You can do whatever you want in the offseason. Plus, you know, whether you're in Miami or LA or Vegas or whatever, like, you know, I get it. Your lifestyle's a little bit different, but you're still grinding. You're still training. You're still practicing. You're still watching tape and getting ready for that week's game during the season. So I don't know. Some guys might say being in a more of a smaller market might actually help their focus and help their stats and performance.
Maybe you know this, you're pretty good with this data stuff, but it seems to me, without knowing the happenings of other teams, that the Browns have a really high turnover year to year. When you compare that to like Pittsburgh, where if you lose 10% of your staff every stinking year, where you can't nail down.
Are you talking about staff or players?
I'm talking about players.
Okay. Yeah
players year to year, where if you got a different offensive line, I don't see other teams where they have that much turnover.
I think turnover in the NFL is the nature of the beast, because none of the contracts are guaranteed. Well, at least most of the contracts are not guaranteed. And you can really cut ties with, like, Jarvis Landry, for example. If the Browns want to keep him next year, he's signed next year at $16.5 million. If they cut him, it'll cost them about $1 million, but that opens up about $15.2 million, which you can throw at one other player, two other players, whatever it might be, draft picks, who knows. And it also opens up a spot. Now, do you want Jarvis Landry? Yes, but they might have to renegotiate that contract where he comes in at a cheaper rate, or maybe he doesn't want to and goes elsewhere. So those are the kind of tough decisions that have to be made. Austin Hooper is another one. Austin Hooper next year, I think, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think he's scheduled to make about $12.5 million for an elite tight end in the NFL. That's not bad. If you're paying Travis Kelce that, if you're paying Kittle that, or if you're paying, you know, one of the better tight ends, Darren Waller, that's okay. But Austin Hooper is not putting up the numbers to earn that paycheck. But if the Browns cut him, it would cost them $11 million, where they would only free up about $1.5 million. So those financial decisions are difficult to make. And that's why those guys get paid a lot of money. And I talk about it, you know? So it's a hard thing to do. Now, if you can work out a trade and maybe, you know, send Austin Hooper to somebody else for maybe a linebacker that you might need, or maybe a late round draft pick, and they eat that money, that's something you could do too. So
yeah, I just struggle with, if there's no continuity and the people that are protecting you, how do you establish?
Yeah. You know what? After I just answered that, I realized it really didn't answer your question all that well.
Thanks a lot, dude.
But I think the Browns, I would say in the past, they've probably turned over guys more and more and more than other teams. But I would say it's fairly common in the NFL for rosters to turn over, I don't know, I'm going to throw a percentage out, 15 to 20% every year, because, you know, you got guys that retire, you got rookies that you bring in, or you got guys that you just cut because you think they're making too much, or whatever it might be. So I think roster changeover and roster construction is very financially driven, and it's dependent on the cap, and it's dependent on whatever, you know, like right now you're paying Baker $18.9 million for next year. That's pretty good. If, you know, if like Josh Allen, for example, he'll make about that same next year, but with the Buffalo Bills in two seasons, that kicks into about $43 million per year. So that eats away, you know, 20 some million dollars that you can go out and spend on free agents. But
you're better off doing that this year.
Exactly. But like the salary cap, and I use that in quotations, because the salary cap is sort of it's there, but it's kind of like a made up thing where you have to stay within its parameters, but it changes every year. So the finances change every year, and somebody kind of new. Exactly. And the market's set
next year.
Exactly. You can almost do, we, like, literally, we can turn this show into talking about sports. I would actually love this. If anybody out there knows anybody that knows a ton about the cap, I think that's a fascinating subject. And it would be fun to talk just numbers, I think, with people on finances and what this guy's worth versus what the, you know, I think that'd be really cool. And maybe when we get towards more like draft time, we can maybe look into that and see. But
are we gonna do another draft party?
I think so, but I think we're gonna maybe change it up a little bit how we do it. Maybe change the format a little bit. Okay. We'll discuss. Okay. We'll discuss. Right. We got time.
I curveball you on every show.
That's okay. I like it. That's all right. That's why I've been recording. So I just get those straight fastballs.
He's trying to no eye contact.
So let's talk a little bit about the NFL playoffs. Here's what we're looking at right now. AFC, you got the top four seeds all advanced. So you got the Titans hosting the Bengals, and you got the Bills taking on the Chiefs. That's the AFC. And then the NFC, you got the Packers taking on the 49ers, who upset the Cowboys. And then you got the Buccaneers taking on the Rams. So you have three of the top four seeds in the NFC with the 49ers moving on. Now, last week in the pick'em, I was actually pretty happy because we went 5-1. That was pretty solid against the spread. I'm going to make picks again for this weekend's four games. And Joe, feel free. I want you to jump in and make your picks. I'm going to start with my first game here. First game, which is Saturday at 4:30. This game's on CBS. It's the Bengals and the Titans. So the Titans, all the home teams, by the way, are favorites. Just looking at these numbers, but the Bengals last week earned their first playoff win in 31 years, which is pretty amazing. So, by the way, too, the Bengals, if anybody's ever sent a text, which I would imagine is 100% of people, no one previous had sent a text since the Bengals have won a playoff game, because texting was invented in 92. 1991 was the last time Cincinnati won a playoff game. So kind of a cool stat there. But Derrick Henry, who was the leading rusher in the NFL two of the last 3 years, excuse me, has been back. He hasn't not played since Halloween, but he is back. He's practiced. He's going to play. Cincinnati also gets back Trey Hendrickson, who led the team in sacks with 14 this year. So Joe Burrow and the Bengals, obviously ahead of schedule, doing great things. But this is an interesting stat. The Bengals are 0-7 all time in road playoff games. In my opinion, I think that stays the same. However, I think the Bengals keep it close enough and cover the 3.5-point spread. So I am going Cincinnati, getting 3.5 points. So Joe, the Titans are 3.5-point favorites. The Bengals are 3.5-point underdogs. What say you?
It's going to be a close game. I think Cincinnati takes it.
You think they win straight up?
Straight up.
Okay.
And I think it's going to be close, though.
All right. Joe likes the Bengals with the money line. I'm going with Bengals with the cover. So I would say in that case, just go with the cover, because usually the 3.5 points won't buy you enough. It's not quite worth the investment. Yeah. But we both like the Bengals in that game. All right. Next game is two teams that are obviously well-known franchises. You got the 49ers, which, you know, we can always beat that drum to in Youngstown of, you know, the owner of the 49ers lives right here in Youngstown. But San Francisco travels to Green Bay to take on the Packers. That game will be Saturday night, 8 o'clock on Fox. This will be at Lambeau Field. And this was a cool stat. My friend Greg texted me this, and he said, I just read this. I double checked the facts. And he said, Jimmy Garoppolo now has the same amount of playoff wins as Joe Montana on the road. Joe Montana had one road playoff victory. Jimmy Garoppolo now has one as well. So kind of a cool stat there. But, you know, when the 49ers were so good, they were playing all their home games, you know, they're playing all their playoff games at home. So, you know, but I thought that was kind of a cool stat. But I think the Packers, just like the last game, I'm going to take the 49ers. I'm going to go with the underdog again here. And I'm going to take the 49ers to cover the 6 points. So they're getting 6 points. So I do like the Packers to win, but I like the 49ers to cover. So I think the 49ers do everything well that the Packers do well. I think the 49ers defense is going to slow them down a bit, but I think the Packers have just enough to get it done and win. And I think that home field advantage takes effect. So Joe, what do you think about this game?
Yeah, I'm thinking it's a really close match game. I'm going to go with you that I think the Packers win by 6, but not enough to hit the spread. So I think I'm going to take San Francisco.
Okay. All right. Very good. So we got, we both got San Francisco. We both have Cincinnati. All right. Next game. This game is two of the top NFC teams. We have the defending Super Bowl champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers hosting the Los Angeles Rams, the Odell Beckham Los Angeles Rams, the 3 versus the 2. This game is Sunday, 3 o'clock on NBC. So the West Coast Buccaneers come to the East Coast to take on Tampa Bay. I think both of these rosters, very, very comparable. Both have really nice wide receivers. Obviously, you know, you got strong defenses on both end. Aaron Donald, for the Rams. You got Ramsey in the backfield, in the secondary there. You have great defenders on both sides of the ball, especially Lavonte David with the Buccaneers. But where it all comes down to me is quarterback play. Matt Stafford has been very good this year, but down the stretch has really struggled. So I'm going to take the better quarterback of the two, and obviously the greatest of all time. I'm going to take Tom Brady. So this one, I'm going to lay the 2.5 points. I'm going to take the favorite. I'm going to take the home team, and I'm going to take the Tampa Bay Buccaneers giving 2.5 points to cover the spread. Joe, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm with you. Tom Brady, he's been in systems that just know how to win playoff games, and I don't think it's going to be that close. I think it's going to be a blowout. So okay. good going, Rams, but I think it ends here.
Okay. All right. So we are locked in on the same picks as of now. So you know, we'll see what Odell Beckham and company do there. Joe, I have to throw this in before we get to our last game. This was one of the cooler things I saw this past weekend. So, fun fact, Tom Brady is older than every opposing NFC coach still in the playoffs. His own coach is older than him, Bruce Arians. But Sean McVay is only 35 years old. Kyle Shanahan, only 42 years old, and so is Matt LaFleur of the Green Bay Packers. Tom Brady is 44, so Tom Brady is older than the other three NFC coaches still left in the playoffs. That's kind of cool.
Yes, it is.
So, you know, just a fun fact there. All right, let's go to our final game. This will be the Sunday night game, 6:30 on CBS. The Buffalo Bills at the Kansas City Chiefs, a rematch of last year's AFC Championship game. We have the Chiefs. And by the way, these lines were as of yesterday. I don't know if they've changed any, but I wouldn't imagine they've moved too much. But the Chiefs are laying 1.5 as the favorite. So Bills coming off an extremely dominating performance against New England, just beat them up really bad. Kansas City beat up the Steelers last week, ended Big Ben's, hosted his retirement party, which was very nice of them, which was very kind. So I trust Mahomes over Josh Allen. I think both of these are two of the more upcoming quarterbacks in the NFL. Mahomes probably the best in the NFL. So I'm going to take the Chiefs. So I'm going to take the underdogs on Saturday, and I'm going to take the favorites on Sunday. So I'm going to take the Chiefs laying 1.5 points at home. I think the Bills are kind of a trendy pick right now, but I'm going to go with the Chiefs laying the 1.5. Joe.
All right, so I'm going to go with the Bills. So this is going to be the game that's the WL.
Okay.
I think Allen's got some momentum going into this game. He looks solid as could be. And I saw Mahomes the first couple weeks of this year. He's got some stuff to get together.
So yeah, you're
I think it's a better organization. I think they're going to win.
Okay. All right. Very good. Very good. So I don't know. We'll see what we do. But Joe and I both have what? The Bengals.
Yes.
We have
Tampa Bay.
Tampa Bay, and we have the 49ers. Yep. And Joe is taking the Bills. I'm taking the Chiefs. So we'll see about what comes out. And then final NFL note, I just wanted to put this out. First team all pro, which was pretty cool. The Browns had one player on the first team offense, one player on the first team defense, Joel Bitonio, the longest tenured Brown inside guard. But a lot of great, great players on this list. Aaron Rodgers, Jonathan Taylor, Cooper Kupp, Devontae Adams, Deebo Samuel, Mark Andrews, Trent Williams, Joel Bitonio, as mentioned, Kelsey, the center for the Chiefs, Zach Martin, and Tristan Wirfs were the all-pro offense. On the defense, the Browns had as well one player. The Steelers had one player. You can probably guess. TJ Watt just tied Michael Strahan's record for all-time sacks in a season, 22 and a half. Miles Garrett was right behind him. Then you got Aaron Donald and Cam Hayward. So the Steelers have two guys on that front defensive line. Very, very impressive.
Michael, can I complain real quick?
Yeah, we're please.
Complain after the, yeah, no, the go Pro for Bowl it. Anyhow. Yeah. If they would actually play that game, think about how amazing it would be to watch those people play those positions. All high-level people, all explosive. It would be amazing to watch.
It would be, but you would have to make it such high stakes financially for it to be worth it for those guys, because if you get injured in an exhibition game and your career, like I mentioned with the contracts earlier on, they're not guaranteed. So you tear your ACL, you tear an Achilles, you tear your labrum, whatever it might be. And then that could cost you an awful lot of money playing in a game that really means nothing.
But it's stupid the way that they do it. They might as well just play Madden.
Yeah.
It'd be more interesting to watch these players
play Madden. I agree. I actually have always been more entertained by like the quarterback competitions and the skills competitions than I have. The NBA has a really entertaining game. They don't play a whole lot of defense. Major League Baseball is probably the best all-star game. Plus, they have the Home Run Derby, the NBA All-Star Games coming up. They have the dunk contest. They got the three-point shootout, the skills competition. That's entertaining for me. Not everyone loves that. But the NFL is by far the worst, you know. And I think it's just because of the nature of the sport. It's so physical. It's so high risk that if, like I said, like maybe what you would have to do is say the winning team, each player gets $1 million. And you know, and the losing team gets nothing. I don't know. I don't know what you do there to make it interesting, but I could tell you the teams would not be behind that. You know, the owners, just say you had Tom Brady in there and, you know, he's trying to win for the NFC or whatever it might be. And, you know, Miles Garrett or TJ Watt comes around the edge and sack him. And then suddenly they end his career. It's like, well, was it worth it to play in that Pro Bowl, you know, versus just saying you're a Pro Bowler? So I don't know,
to the point where it's an event that you put on your resume kind of a thing.
Yeah,
it's just a blow off.
Yeah, it really
is. Hawaii, and that's about it.
Yeah, and you know what, I don't even know if it is in Hawaii anymore. I think sometimes they'll do it in the Super Bowl city, sometimes they'll do it in Orlando. So I don't know. It's to me stupid. Though, yeah, that's a good thing. They need to put their heads together, come up with something fun that's interactive for the fans. That might be kind of cool. So, I don't know. We'll see.
Madden, sorry, I'm telling you, Madden's the way to go.
Madden's not a bad idea. To round out that list, though, real quick, Micah Parsons, Darius Leonard, Devontae Campbell, Trayvon Diggs led the league in interceptions, Jalen Ramsey, Kevin Byard, and former Cleveland Brown, Jordan Poyer, in that too. So pretty cool. So that is that's our list. That's our show for today. Joe,
now I'm gonna attempt to play this video right after it.
Okay.
So I'm gonna get it queued up. If I can't get the audio, I'll cut off of it and we'll just play it as a separate thing.
Okay.
I'm gonna attempt to do it.
All right. So Danny and company, if we're playing this, if it doesn't work, we're gonna upload it on a second podcast, but hopefully we'll get it to play. So Joe is gonna work his magic behind the scenes and do his best. If not, he will not fail you because this guy knows his stuff, and we'll work it out.
All right,
so
keep talking for like one more minute. in the business is
what we're talking. That's fine. So let me tell you a little bit about Danny too, real quick. I was actually coaching at Boardman. I was an assistant coach probably about 5 years ago, and we go in to play South Range, and we're both teams were pretty good. similar records and, you know, pretty high scoring game. And this freshman kid for South Range puts up 20 points, 22 rebounds or something like that on us. Caught my attention, caught all of our coaches' attention because we had her on the scouting report, but we didn't have her as like a stop this player. But she came out in this game, dominated us from, you know, basically the first quarter to the end. And they ended up beating us by a few points. But I know Coach Barnes at YSU, that caught his attention. He offered her after that season. And, you know, the rest is history for her. She ends up being Western Reserve's leading scorer all time, leading rebounder all time, was the Mahoning County Player of the Year, and a ton of other awards. And I believe she was a good volleyball player and did some other things. But on top of that, and she'll tell you a little bit about it, has been a 4.0 student her entire life and has maintained that through the first semester of college. So what do you think, Joe?
Let's
ready?
Try it.
All right. Yeah, all right. We're going to try it. If it doesn't work, we'll upload it on a separate podcast, but appreciate you guys. And we'll talk to you soon.
Of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You're in Moon Township. Is that correct? Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's correct.
So Danny is a basketball player at Robert mm-hmm. Morris University. She's a freshman and played locally here a year at South Range and 3 years at mm-hmm. Western Reserve. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Well, and yeah. I can speak from experience because I remember Danny very, very young. I was coaching at Boardman. And we mm-hmm. both had very good teams, and she put up mm-hmm. a 20-point, 20-rebound as a freshman, and just killed us on the boards, and they ended up beating us by like 6 or 7 points. So mm-hmm. I remember that game and that performance very, very specifically. So you caught my eye at a very, very young age. So how has, let me ask you this, so let me just start with this, and we'll kind of work our way back. How has the transition from you kind of always being that team's star, that team's leading player, best player, leading mm-hmm. scorer, whatever, to now transitioning, and now you're kind of the young pup again mm-hmm. as a freshman. What's that like, going from the star to now like fighting for playing time?
Well, it's a battle because like now that we're playing at the highest level of college, every girl on our team was the best on their high school team, their AAU team. So there's a lot of talent. And being a freshman, there are upperclassmen that have had years of experience. And so obviously like fighting for more playing time and fighting for that spot is pretty hard. I'm getting some minutes here and there, so it's working out for me. I'm learning. We just have to learn. Mm-hmm. That's like the base part of it, because the transition, I've learned so many more things, and applying that to the game, that's what has to happen, from practice to applying it to games. And then you have to perform in the games to make sure you get more playing time. And then the coaches are always there. They're understanding and everything. So if you want extra work, they'll give you workouts to do. And you just have to learn. It's a whole learning experience. It's very new. And there's 7 freshmen on the team wow. this year, including me. So it's all a new learning experience for all of us, which is nice, because since there's 7 of us, we are close-knit. We're a very close-knit group, and we have each other's backs along with the upperclassmen. But the transition, if it wasn't for the other freshmen and for the upperclassmen being so nice, then the transition would be harder. But it was pretty easy transitioning from high school to college. But it's just a learning experience and getting that experience that the upperclassmen have right now.
That's great. That's great. And that's pretty cool that you guys can come in a big class of 7 mm-hmm. to kind of, you know, bond and build that relationship early. That's great. So Danny, talk to us. You know, there's a lot of kids in our area that are, you know, being recruited, whether it's football, mm-hmm. baseball, basketball, you know, whatever it might be. Talk yeah. to us a little bit about the recruiting process, and talk okay. to us a little bit about how you made your decision and what was the best fit for you.
Okay, yeah. So the recruiting process, was probably one of the most fun things in my experience, because you get to travel to all these different places and learn what all these different colleges have to offer. But like, my advice to kids that are getting recruited right now, I just keep your options open. Mm-hmm. And when you fall in love with the school, make sure like you make a list, but don't like fall for that school automatically. So, because you might get more options down the road, and then you're not only going for sports, you have to keep in mind that you're going for academics as well. So you want a good academic school along with what will like satisfy you for the sporting side of it. And that's ultimately what I kept in the back of my head when I was getting recruited. My first offer was from YSU when I wasn't even a sophomore yet. I was going into my sophomore year, and they offered me pretty early, but everyone told me in my advice, they said, keep your options open, like you're still developing. And that's what I did. I kept my options open, and then I went on these visits. But ultimately, I chose Robert Morris because of the academic side of it and because of the basketball side and the coaches. I felt like I had a good connection with the coaches. And that's another big part of it. You need to like the coaching staff. Because if you don't like the coaching staff, then there's no point in going to that school, because the coaching staff needs to be there for you, and you need to have that trust between the coaches and the players. So that's why I chose Robert Morris for the academics, for the coaches, and then for like basketball in general.
That's great. That's great. I'm glad you brought up the academic side of things too. Mm-hmm. What are you studying right now? What are you focusing on?
Well, originally I went in as a nursing major because my whole thing was I wanted to be a peds, go into little kids, want to help little kids. I just want to make an impact. And I've always liked little kids, and I feel like I'm really good with little kids. But when I got here, I was like, yes, I'm going to go into nursing. Like, this is going to be great. I'm going to do great. And then it hit me like the first semester came, and I'm swamped with all this work, and I'm like so stressed. It was very stressful. So in basketball, it goes on all year. So even in the fall, we still had practices and everything and film sessions, and my anatomy physiology class was online, which made it even harder. So I called my mom, and I would call my coaches, and I'm like, I think I want to change my major. So right now I am majoring in sports psychology and I'm planning on double minoring in education and special education. So I could still, so hopefully with that degree, I could teach while coach at the same time, because that's what I've always wanted to do when I was little. I wanted to coach basketball and teach. So hopefully that's where it gets me.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, you got the right personality for it, and I think you'll make a good one day. So,
thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So, let me ask this. So, being a student athlete, you know, the basketball grind, the studying grind, all that stuff. Take us through. You know, I know no 2 days might not be exactly the same, but walk us through like a day in your life.
Okay, yeah, perfect. So we have practices depending on our schedules. So yesterday we had an earlier practice because the majority of the girls on our team had late classes. Mm-hmm. So depending on what everyone's classes are, we schedule our practices around them. So because we focus on academics, because student always comes before athlete. So yesterday, since we are preparing for an upcoming game, we had a film session yesterday at 7:30 in the morning, and that lasted for about 30 minutes, 40 minutes. And then after that, we go out on the court and we get warmed up. So our practice will start around 8, and then it'll end around like 10, 10:15. And then yesterday we do this session called ACL prevention, and our team physical therapist comes in and he takes us through exercises to strengthen our muscles so we could prevent an ACL injury in our program, because no one wants an ACL injury. So that's good that we do that. And then all of our classes were actually remote yesterday because of the big snowstorm. But usually on Tuesdays, I have class on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I don't have class on Mondays, Wednesdays, or Fridays. Wow. So that's nice. But Tuesday's my heavy day. So Tuesday I have three classes, and that's my physiological psychology class, my humanities class, and then my public speaking and persuasion class.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
So that's my day on like a school day when I have classes and everything. But on a day like today, I just wake up and go to practice, maybe get an extra workout in. And since we have a game tomorrow, we do this thing called a lift stretch. So we're stretching, but like we're also doing some like strengthening incorporated with that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And speaking of, I believe your next two games, they are against your hometown team, Youngstown State, the Penguins.
Yes, they are.
So does that add a little extra special element to it for you?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it does. Especially because like they're one of the schools that recruited me. And that's the school that everyone goes to back home. So all my friends go there. And that's the school that has always been like down the street from me. And my grandparents went there, my parents went there, so that was like the school. Mm-hmm. So but I mean, it does add a little element, but at the end of the day, I'm just there playing basketball and I'm just enjoying what I do.
Yeah, that's pretty cool too, choosing Robert Morris, that you get to play YSU twice a year, this case I believe three times this year. So that's pretty neat that, you know, people back home, it's close enough for them to come see you, but you also get at least a non-home home game in Youngstown.
Exactly.
So that's really neat. So Danny, let me ask you this too. You've been all county, you've been, I think, all state, you've broken school records. I mean, against us, you went 20-20, and that's probably where Coach Barnes got you on the radar. You set all these school marks and records, but let me ask you this. What is your favorite basketball memory? It could be going back to being a little kid or to yesterday.
Oh, wow. That's hard. You got me on this one. It's definitely like winning a district championship, either my freshman, sophomore, or senior year. I think it's my senior year. That was my best memory, winning the district championship, with because that's like my last year, and unfortunately we lost in the semifinals and regionals, but that was like the one thing that our senior class we wanted to achieve before we headed out. And I think that was a very good game for us. So that's what my favorite memory would have to be.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I haven't talked to him for a little while, but Coach Miller, I always know, did a great job with you guys. And that was a really, really solid team you guys had last year. So, that's cool. Yeah. I'm sorry to put you on the spot, but,
You're okay.
Figure how to ask you that. So, let me just get you out on one more question here. So a two part question. What are your goals the rest of this season, and what are your goals the rest of your college basketball career?
Okay, so starting off with my goals for this season, obviously I want to get better and develop more, even though I might not be getting like a lot of playing time, hopefully getting more playing time down the stretch as I get better and as I am developing. And for the future, hopefully I learn from all my mistakes like I made my freshman year, and having that experience, I could help teach the new freshmen coming in while also still focusing on myself and getting better, and maybe even like playing more minutes and having like an impact on this team, like out on the court as well. But that's the basketball side of it, but mm-hmm. I can't leave out the academic side of it, because the academic side is just as important. I've always been a straight A student, so I am aiming for those straight A's. I have one semester down of straight A's, so a couple more to go, but that's what I am ultimately aiming for my career and academics as well.
That's fantastic. A true student athlete. So I lied. I have one more question for you.
That's okay.
So what advice would you give to, let's say, a freshman in high school that might be on a similar path as you? You know, good student, good athlete, or, you know, maybe you hit the reset button, you go back to your previous, you know, to your own self, mm-hmm. your freshman year of high mm-hmm. school. What piece of advice would you give Dani Vuletic as a freshman in high school?
Dribble the ball. every single day you need to pick up a basketball and do something. Dribbling, shooting. If like freshman year, I wish I would have started lifting more and working out more, because if you want to be a college athlete, yes, you could come in. Like I came in, I by far was not the strongest person. And even in high school, I could tell you that like I was a toothpick. I was so skinny. But in now, like I actually have some muscle on me. So in college, they'll develop you. But getting that like kick start, that'll mm-hmm. help you so much. But every day you need to be in the gym or lifting, and you have to be in shape. The college pace compared to high school is so much faster, and there's a lot of running. Coaches like transition offense a lot. Mm-hmm. So whenever you can get out and run, you could get out and run. But I would also say, if you can be a part of an AAU team, that even from a younger age, I think sixth grade I started playing AAU. It could be younger than that, older than that, but make sure, like, if you want to, you can get on an AAU team, travel and have like other coaches see you, go to exposure events. And maybe like if you could get in the gym, have your coach do extra workouts with you, just mm-hmm. anything extra will help.
No doubt. Well, mm-hmm. well, Dani, we thank you for taking time out of your day, and appreciate you. You are mm-hmm. a great example for younger kids to look up to, and I think you're going to make a great coach one day, and you're going to be a teacher, psychologist, whatever it uh-huh. is. You're going to do a great job. So keep up with mm-hmm. your goal, stay on track, and we wish you all the best. I know you got Youngstown State the next two games. So
yes, we do.
If you guys are watching this, you guys, I believe, are home on Thursday mm-hmm. and at YSU yes. on Saturday.
Yes, so, correct.
So mm-hmm. anybody watching this show, get out to the Beagley Center on Saturday. Go, Dani, you're wearing number 4. Is that correct?
Yes, I am wearing number 4.
Go check out number 4 for Robert Morris and as they take on the Penguins. So, Dani, again, thank you so much, and have a great day.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the videos and the word of